Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you, sir?
Good day, good evening. Good morning, whenever you hear this, what's going on? And Nikias, good to see you again. Hope you enjoyed the weekend festivities. I'm excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for embracing your bounce. Unfortunately, it looks like Mr. AVO is no longer. He's out the door. Unfortunately, the Hawks did get eliminated, so no more trips for Nikias, at least for 1 to 2 months. I don't know about his business workings, but it looks like those are out, scrapped for a little bit. But I'm excited to be here. Feeling good, feeling great, back in the great state of Oregon for a little bit. Nikias cost me a trip to Salt and Straw so he could talk about some hoops. So we're going to have some fun here tonight. I'm not sure how much of my services are going to be needed. We did have a Western Conference Finals that ended with Chris Paul losing his mind, and we did have an Eastern Conference Finals end with Chris Middleton losing his mind. So what I'm going to do here is just hit this mute button. I may or may not be here during this podcast. This may be a clear out, a solo, a mellow ISO from the mid-2000s. You may not know. Theater of the mind. So we're going to have a blast. I'm going to hand it to Nikias as he navigates the Chris's. We're going to name this episode Everyone Loves Chris.
It feels like Christmas. I guess that's where we would start there. Happy to have you with me as always. I hope you also enjoyed your weekend festivities. I don't have any immediate... We'll see about Atlanta. I don't have any club appearances or anything like that, so I'm not going to feed into the bit. Vacationing may be a whole nother thing altogether, but that's totally different. We had a lot of hoops going on. The Clippers did, in fact, lose in six at the hands of a 41 piece from Chris Paul, which I missed the game live. And I come back to see Chris Paul drop that stat line, and my jaw literally dropped. Like, it's the perfect bounce back. I mean, we talked about Paul's kind of negative impact on the Suns after he had came back from COVID and dealing with that, and how the offense had kind of slowed, and how he was passing up shots and just hurting the general flow of Phoenix's offense. And it just, and to your point, you said you felt like Paul was going to come out firing in that game six. And boy, did he. Sprinkling in jumpers from everywhere, aggressive drives, made kickouts when he needed to, but he took the game and pretty much shaped it in his image from the opening tip. So, fantastic performance by him.
He shaped it in his image, all right.
To the point where Patrick Beverley lost his mind more than he normally does towards the end of it. And just an incredible shot-making display for Paul. Great way for him to bounce back. He's now entering his first finals appearance. Very excited for him from a legacy standpoint. And even that point is kind of weird because, like, if him making the finals now makes you suddenly appreciate how good Chris Paul is and has been at basketball, then I think that says more about what you've been watching or not watching at a certain point. But I am glad that he has this moment and the Suns are positioned well to win this thing. And on the other side of the bracket, a tremendous push for Atlanta. I'm not sure how many people had them making an Eastern Conference Finals this season. So this season is a massive success for them. Trae Young fully arrived. Bogdan Bogdanovic, even with the injuries, kind of softened what he did throughout the regular season. Like, still a great campaign for him. Speaking of Cams, Cam Reddish making a late appearance in this postseason. Tremendous defense, some shot making, the three balls falling for him. Very excited to see what comes for him next year. Kind of hate the way the season ended for Trae Young. A great regular season, a little bit up and down towards the early portions of it, but ended up finishing that season strong. Was ridiculous throughout this entire playoff run. And an ankle/foot injury just kind of derailed things for him. Gave it a go in game six. Clearly wasn't himself all the way. It stinks for them to go out on this note, but I am wildly impressed for what Atlanta did this season.
Do y'all see how excited Nikias is for this episode?
Come Come on,
he's
man.
He's about as excited as that man on that motorcycle in the background. This man went from Phoenix to Atlanta without even dribbling. I'm calling a traveling violation on you,
Wow. Well,
I'm going to pull it back to Chris Paul because Chris Paul going to the finals for the first time and having that game against that team on that floor was something to see. And he took over that game. I mean, you had possessions where Devin Booker was walking to half court because he knew Chris Paul had it, and Chris Paul had it. Mm-hmm. But the best part about that was not just the Chris Paul performance. It was that we got the greatest hits of Chris Paul, which was Chris Paul putting on a masterclass while also doing Chris Paul things, like, getting elbow smashed in the head by DeMarcus Cousins, quote unquote, or continuing to kick his leg out on 3-point shots and finally drawing a foul on it. Just those little Chris Paul things that resulted in Patrick Beverley two-hand shoving him towards the end of that game. Do you know how mad someone has to make you on the basketball court for them to two-hand shove you in the back?
One may say it'd make them big mad.
The hashtag is big mad, folks. But that was always fun to watch, and I'm sure we'll talk about the Suns more later. I'll give a shout out to the Clippers as well for that run that they had. I think salute to Ty Lue, salute to Paul George for ending the memes, salute to Reggie Jackson for his consistency during that postseason run. I always talked about him shifting playoff series, but he really was a constant. And mm-hmm. and for him to refine his game, to refine his confidence, to find, quote-unquote, a home, that's always fun to see for a veteran. And then just the defensive buy-in that team had, man. Like the defense they played and displayed over series to survive and make multiple efforts to buy in, throw multiple coverages at teams, that's not easy to do. So they've built a framework, obviously, to where they'll feel comfortable going forward. So I'm very interested to see what they are going to be doing next. What did you think of the Clippers run overall?
Oh, I'm glad that they were able to push through that second round ceiling that's kind of been evading them basically since the Lob City era. So it was wonderful to see them get to that conference finals. It sucks that Kawhi Leonard wasn't able to make an impact on the series due to injury. Would have been nice to see like what that matchup would have looked like with him in it, because obviously he's one of the best players in the world. I think he could have shifted some things, maybe not shifted the series result, but would have loved to see it. But overall, I kind of want to echo what you said. Ty Lue coached his tail off throughout this postseason. Made necessary adjustments from the rotation, from deploying different defensive schemes, attacking different weak points offensively. He had his finger on the pulse of this team all the way through. Paul George, we got to stop. We got to stop with Paul George. We have to stop. That man is an absolute baller. And the slack that he picked up when Kawhi went down should erase all of the playoff P memes. They won't, because that's not how the internet works. But he was tremendous throughout this run. Reggie Jackson was great. We talked about
Good for him for Reggie Jackson. The final one of the season, folks. The final one. Embrace it. Savor it. We got our last good for him. Did not get one for DeMarcus Cousins, but that's another discussion for another day. I guess I should tap out on that for the season. Go ahead and continue. My bad, guys. Sorry.
What? It's not a good for him for Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson was legitimately good throughout this entire postseason run. The shot making from him was key, especially when Kawhi went down. He basically became the second banana for Paul George. Shoot, on some nights, he was the first banana just with the way that he set the tone in some first quarters for him. Kind of closed some doors with him late in games, particularly in the Utah series. Not enough good things to say about Reggie Jackson, what he was able to do. His free agency is going to be interesting with the Clippers cap situation and with Reggie Jackson basically being a buyout guy. Like, they won't be able to throw the kind of bag at him that some other teams can. So it's going to be interesting to see where Reggie Jackson's priorities are in terms of, I mean, he did say during that postgame presser after game 6 that this Clipper team saved him. And for him to feel that strongly about that team and about that locker room, like, I think that speaks to where he is mentally there. So maybe he does come back for whatever the Clippers can offer, you know, assuming it isn't like the vet minimum or anything like that, because of course he's worth more than that. But if they can throw somewhat of a bag at him, I would imagine he would want to come back. We have to watch, see what happens with Nicholas Batum, another buyout guy that gave them plus value throughout the year. We got to keep an eyeball on Kawhi Leonard at this point. I would imagine he stays, but there's enough smoke to at least raise an eyebrow about what he decides to do with his player option this year.
Let's be honest. Let's be honest, folks. Mm-hmm. We don't know anything that Kawhi Leonard is ever going to do in life.
Yeah.
So it's just going to be a cloud over the Clippers offseason right now. But also salute to Marcus Morris. Again, I'm going to give him another one. Man played the 5-4, whatever you needed, jab J, threes, physical defense. I thought he was great for that team. Quick point question on the Reggie Jackson deal, because it kind of reminds me of Rondo, where you have success with a good team in the playoffs and you've displayed a certain level that could help multiple teams. But your best role is going to be on a good team where you can just be yourself. Like, I don't know if Reggie Jackson elevates, you know, a Charlotte or something like that. But he's probably going to get an offer that he can't refuse bag-wise. So that'll be very interesting to see dynamic-wise. But, yeah, so salute to the Clippers, man.
Salute to the Clippers. And I will give a quick nod to DeMarcus Cousins, an official good for him for what he was able to do in the series. Again, just completely wrecked Dario Saric whenever they matched up against each other. Mostly held his own defensively. There were some ugly times mixed in there, but he provided plus value to a playoff team. And if you go back to our earlier pods when DeMarcus Cousins was first weighed by Houston, I just didn't see that at all and was very loud about that. So I will gladly admit that I was wrong on that. He found a role in this Clippers team.
You're a big man for that, Nikias. That's all I've been waiting for here on the Dunks. We've come full circle. My job here is complete. Folks, thank you for listening to another episode.
Wait a minute. We can't get the outro before the series preview. That man's ready to tap out already.
I got what I needed. So yep.
That was it. We can shift to Atlanta before we move on to the actual finals. Man, again,
hell of a run, man. Hell of a run. Because I want to add to what you said, the leap that Trae Young made. You know, if you go back to earlier episodes of this podcast that we had, I think he was, again, one of the first players we kind of quote unquote went in on in the what's up with you section of the pod, where he wasn't making those plays. He wasn't making those reads. It was to the point where it was just weird. It was odd. You know, he was speeding up too much, maybe going to the floater too much. And he not only turned that around, went ahead and won two playoff series because two teams couldn't figure him out. And unfortunately got hurt in third. Just putting his stamp on the game, not just scoring, but creating plays. Him getting downhill was just unstoppable at times because it opened up so much for that team as far as him being able to score, him being able to create, and then he was able to make the right reads, bend the defense to his will. Those are big steps for him. And for him to do that during the playoffs is so key. And I think that's important for him. I think there's a quote where he said he now knows how hard the playoffs are. So I imagine he's gotten this taste of it. He's gotten a taste of success. And now he's going to be able to understand, hey, this is what I have to do for my team and then build on that for next year. So I think that's going to be huge for him. And then Cam Reddish, that run in that Bucks series that he had on both ends of the floor, that's good stuff. Those are some good flashes. Now, he may not be all the way there where you need him to be consistency-wise, but defensively he showed an activity that I had not seen as far as getting into Chris Middleton, being active, trying to deny the ball. Offensively and aggression. You know, the man was taking pull-up jumpers and muttering to himself every time he made one. Like yeah. he was personally in a battle with Chris Middleton, who was losing his mind, and they were screening him off every time. But he was still acting like it was really one-on-one. So like that kind of mindset, you love to see that. I mean, the Hawks, they could not stop fighting. They never knew when to stay down. So, I mean, I'll let you keep going on them. You again did not mention Danilo Gallinari or Lou Williams. So as you go back, I'm going to check their ages real quick and just take a look here while you go on.
Well, I'm glad you started there, because I was going to bring up, you know, just talking about kind of the mental fortitude this Atlanta Hawks team had. Like, Trae Young goes down. The Bucks are up 2-1 with a chance to go up 3-1. And Atlanta punches Milwaukee in the mouth and takes complete control of game four all the way through and blows them out the water. And that starts with what Lou Williams did offensively. Or what he did in this playoff run surprised me, to be completely honest with you. Like, we know what the shot making and some of the playmaking and just some of the fakes and the foul drawing that he provides in the regular season has done so for a year. He's won multiple six-man of the year awards for a reason. But throughout his career, that hasn't completely translated into the postseason. It did more than just about ever in this postseason. We talked about it on earlier pods, the way the Trae Young, Lou Williams backcourt was able to survive and not just survive, but sometimes thrive. In the Knicks series, in the Philadelphia series, like, Lou Williams won them some quarters, which won them some games. So he obviously deserves some credit for it, the kind of impact that he brought offensively. And Danilo Gallinari, your favorite, your new favorite player, apparently. Timely post-ups, timely shot making. Going back to the New York Knicks series and the Philadelphia series in particular. Well, I'll say the Knicks series in particular, like, holding his own defensively, shading a guy like Julius Randle to a side, you know, holding his responsibilities there, was not played off the floor in any of these three series defensively, which was kind of a concern heading in if he didn't have the shot making going. But he put it together and gave Atlanta some really good minutes. Again, was really impressed with what Cam Reddish did. The defense is something that I have been high on since he entered the league. I wrote about this for basketballnews.com, a piece on Cam after game four in particular. But the defense has been there since he's been in the league. It was a little bit of a surprise that the defense was so far ahead of the offense based on what his projections were. But the defense is there. The shooting is going to be the swing skill for him moving forward. I don't know if he's going to have like a 6 3-and-a-quarter type of shooting impact moving forward. But if he can knock down threes at a consistent clip, you have at bare minimum a guy that can be a high level 3-and-D wing for you. And you add that to what DeAndre Hunter brings when he's healthy, what Clint Capella does on the interior, what Onyeka Okongwu apparently is going to provide on both ends of the floor. The Hawks have a strong foundation on both ends with young guys and veterans. So this is a team that we'll see what happens this offseason to see where the other teams project in the East. But like, this Hawks team isn't going anywhere.
Yeah, they made the run that I think the hype was added to before the season started. They made that run. They validated that. And the East is going to be tough. So there's no guarantee this is going to replicate. You have the teams at the top already. You have Miami, who I'm sure will find a way to get back up there. So it'll be interesting. And again, a shout out to Coach Nate McMillan. They removed that interim tag fairly quickly and went ahead and rewarded him with that 4-year deal. I think that kind of turnaround, we don't see that very often in this league. And to get a young roster to perform the way they performed in the playoffs, that deserves praise, because it never looked at any point in time like they didn't belong. Mm-hmm. They never necessarily looked rattled. They looked like they were there to win. And that is impressive to me. I think that he kind of evolved in that sense, as far as being able to get those guys to buy in, being able to communicate, being able to get that belief from those guys on both ends. That allowed them to fight through some of the adversity they faced and take some of those playoff series they did. So salute to him. Glad he got that tag removed. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Now, I do have a question for you, just as we're talking about the Hawks before we move on to your Chris Middleton ISO for 20 to 30 minutes.
Go ahead.
The tricky part's going to be building on this moment for Atlanta. Your young team made a run, made a heck of a run. And they've shown that they belong to a degree. But one of the toughest things in the league to manage is overachieving. And now the question is, do you take this and build on it? Do you need to make another move to get up? Like, that next move for Atlanta is going to be very interesting to me. Do you have any concern at all with that? Or is this just old person talk?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, this really becomes the John Collins question, right? Because I think before you could even get into, do you consolidate anything or anything like that, you have to see what kind of contract Collins is going to warrant. Like, he already turned down $9 million before the season started. So we'll have to see what kind of bag he commands, because he was able to have a positive impact throughout this postseason. Gave you the rebounding, gave you the interior scoring, shot well from three. Even though teams still just kind of defended him like a non-shooter, which is odd to me considering he shot well from three throughout the entire regular season. I was kind of anticipating his coverage to change at some point, but it didn't. But shot well, but also did the little things. Going back to the Philadelphia series, like timely weak side rim protection, solid isolation defense against Tobias Harris, against Ben Simmons, even though Ben Simmons also defended himself, but that's a whole nother thing. But Collins filled in with little plays, timely offensive rebounds throughout the postseason. So he's shown that he isn't just a guy that gets numbers for you or just makes highlight plays during the regular season. He can dig in, take a little bit of a lesser role in terms of being featured offensively and still provide an impact. And so the locker room seems to love him. He wants to be there. It would be nice to see Atlanta figure that out and bring him back into the fold at a number that makes sense for both. From there, I do think they have enough young talent. They have enough wings. They have enough young guys to consolidate and make a big swing if they want to make, if they want to do that. I brought this up for Memphis in particular on earlier pods. Like, if Bradley Beal is available, then why not consolidate and try to make that kind of big swing to give Trey a real number two guy that could take some of the scoring load off of him?
No, I feel you. I think John Collins made himself some money, so it'll be interesting to see who makes that move, who makes that splash. But he did prove himself in that playoff run. I think defensively, it's not as bad as it may look at times. I think offensively, he still has a lot of weapons he can bring to the table as far as being a really good roller, being able to slip, being able to space the floor. The question will be, can you have him make an impact offensively in the playoffs as teams go to more switches? How do you make that work? But I thought he had a good run.
Oh, absolutely. So I'm interested to see what happens there. Again, could that be more, I don't want to say proud because I'm not a Hawks fan, but like just really impressed by what the Hawks were able to do this season. And just to the Trae Young point, going back a little bit, for Trae Young to say, I've learned how hard playoff basketball is. And he basically averaged 29 and 10 during his first postseason run. That should be scary for the rest of the East. Now, actually, I have a Trae Young question for you. With the way that he was able to kind of dictate playoff games this early, like heading into the postseason, one of the questions I had was, what is it going to look like on the other end of the floor? And this was kind of the question about Trae Young's value in a vacuum, right? You know what he brings as a scorer, you know what he brings as a playmaker. But defensively, because of his size, because of his effort, because of some combination of the two, he on the surface looked like this big target that could be hunted defensively. And that would kind of limit the impact that he could have. Do you think after this postseason run, do you think those concerns were kind of overblown? Or do you think this is an instance of the teams that he faced kind of not being able to just exploit him in that way?
I think the concern is still valid, especially when you look at the last game that Milwaukee and Atlanta played, where Chris Middleton ended up being able to put him in pick and roll and they were able to get some points out of that. I think there's still a concern with those kind of wings with size, put him in action. And then sometimes the off ball has improved with his helping, with his stunts, but there is still sometimes some over helping. So he's not a complete liability, which I think is an important distinction to make. But it's still something he's going to have to work through. I mean, you look at someone like Steph Curry, to this day, they still put him in pick and roll. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not something that's going to go away. He's still going to have to work and improve, and he's going to be put to the test in these playoff series. But he did hold his own probably better than most expected. I'll give him that. I guess that last game is burning my brain, but I think he showed that you can't just simply attack me. We'll see, because the playoff run may have dictated it. The Knicks didn't have a guy who could really make it work. and the Sixers were seemingly unwilling to get it done that way. So we'll see how it goes going forward. But yeah, he did better than I thought, but it's still something that's going to be in the playbook and the game plan.
All right, fair enough. And before we move on to the Hawks, I just want to say, I mean, you touched on a little bit earlier, like the East is tough. There are the teams at the top. You know, Brooklyn's going to be there barring health concerns. Milwaukee's going to be back. We'll see what happens with Philly because they have a Ben Simmons decision to make. Miami's going to be hunting around. Boston's going to be hunting around. I just want to get ahead of this early. If we do get to next season and like the Hawks are a second round out or something, like I don't want to hear any fraud talk or anything like that about what happened this season. Let's grow up. Let's improve the discourse. We don't need to get into any of that. Let's get this out of the way early. What the Hawks did this season was incredible, and it should just stay there.
Was that an early we saw you?
That is a
whole year in advance?
That is a very early we saw you.
Did you just combine like a victory lap and a we saw you?
If that's what we want to call it, yes. Man. That talk just bothers me. It bothers me. We should be so much better than this. Like, we, in theory, we should all be watching the same sport. So we're not going to do a Big Mad. It's fine.
Oh, we were so close there, folks. We were so close to getting a Big Mad, folks. We were right on the edge. We almost got him there. I may have bungled a layup there. That's on me.
You Courtney need it. It's fine.
I'll continue to get better. I'm not sure what happened, but give it up for the man that can't leave Peachtree alone. One last time for Atlanta's very own.
Darn it. I can't do this. Well, Chris Middleton's in the NBA Finals. How are we feeling about that?
Oh, boy. Folks, you can't see it. Mikhaios has busted out two bottles of sparkling cider.
Wait a minute. That's the
And we are ready to talk about Chris Middleton.
Don't lie to these people like that. That's It's three bottles. Let's be correct. But no, I don't have any.
I apologize. Let me let you get that together while I go ahead and give my piece on Chris Middleton. He was incredible. He was incredible in that game five and that game six. I mean, he made every shot in the book. And the big shift was, you talked about it on this pod, as far as him being someone who can make you pay shot making wise, but not necessarily a guy that is going to bend the defense. But once Giannis went down, he made shots at a level that made Atlanta flinch. And they started to send more help. Mm-hmm. And they started to put two on the ball, whether they meant to or not. And now you have a scenario where Chris Middleton was making the defense pay with his shot making and also bending it and creating opportunities for others. And that can't happen. Like, if Chris Middleton can do that, Milwaukee looks like a completely different team. Giannis or not. So salute to him for playing to that level and getting to that. I mean, that second half stretch was incredible. But good teammate, going to pass the rock. They hit you, cut down to the dunker spot. If the defense helps, I'm right here.
I appreciate that. I am ecstatic for Chris Middleton. As a guy who has been flamed for some of his postseason performances, and rightfully so in some cases, it's nice to see him not only get to the finals with this team, but also have that kind of performance in a closeout game. Because it still feels like, after a couple of all-star appearances, even after the big contract, it still feels like people at large don't recognize how good he is. Between the shot making, the shooting in general, the improved playmaking, what he can do defensively, not an elite on-ball guy, but a guy that can slither across screens off the ball to kind of track guys that way, does have the length to defend different positions. He just fills so many gaps for this Milwaukee team. And with Milwaukee shifting the way they have offensively, more specifically, Giannis shifting more to a screener and handoff guy late in games, Chris Middleton has assumed a lot more on-ball responsibility late in games, and he has largely answered the bell. And again, game six was kind of the exaggerated version of what he's been able to do this season, where they called on him to have a larger load. You know, in this case, Giannis was hurt. And not only did he delivered with a bang. Like, this is what Chris Middleton can do. He is not a superstar, but he is very much a star level wing. And it is long time for him to be recognized as such.
Oh, that was it?
Yeah, I'll keep it short. Yeah.
Man, I thought you were going to come with hellfire and brimstone, but we'll take it.
No,
we'll take it.
Got to save that for the in the event that he wins Finals MVP. Then that's when we pop the bottles on. We do the live pod after whatever game clinches the series. That's when I open up the sparkling bottle of Martinelli's. But you know, got to keep the door open for that. We'll see.
My apologies. I do apologize. Did you and Chuck celebrate the Bucks coming out the East in Atlanta? Or
oh no,
no. That didn't happen? My bad.
No, that's not a thing that...
It's not a thing? Okay, my bad. One quick note before we get to the finals preview. I do want to tip my cap to the Bucks for their defense in the last two games of that series. They made the move to switch everything, one through five, and it changed the whole series. And that's about as locked in as I think I've seen them play defense. And the experiments, the adjustments they made during the season paid off. And it wasn't just like an automatic. It was really subtle stuff where they would switch off ball actions. But sometimes, depending on the personnel, Drew would fight over, PJ would fight over, and they wouldn't switch until the ball screen happened. I mean, I think Atlanta ran triple handoff Chicago action for a whole half, and it never worked because Milwaukee blew it up with switches. And my concern with their switching was that it would become an automatic. It would be an exploit and teams could hurt it, and they couldn't do that. I thought Brook Lopez did just a great job of keeping everything in front, containing, contesting. I thought they took away space well. They showed help well. And I thought even just a little thing like putting PJ Tucker on Trae Young in that last game was important to take away Atlanta's ability to attack the post-ups. Because you take away the screen, now it's a roll, but you're rolling into PJ Tucker. So whatever exploits Atlanta had found with the post-ups, they couldn't really go to. So it's another thing they got off the table. But I did want to salute them for that activity because that defensive effort really, really, really allowed them to put a hold on this. And Atlanta never really got their rhythm going in those last two games. So I'll give it up to them. Give it up to Bud. Even though I still think they get in their way entirely too much.
Yes.
They have gotten here. So can't take that away from where they were during that Brooklyn series to being in the NBA Finals with Giannis being injured. That's a lot of belief. That's some resiliency. That's a overcoming adversity. That's a team that can find a way to get it done. So salute to the Bucks, and let's talk about some finals basketball.
Let's do it. And just a quick note, just to piggyback off of you, Brook Lopez has been incredible over the past couple of rounds. He's been incredible this entire postseason. Let me not sell him short.
Let me check his age real quick, see if there's any slander that have been applied to him. Let me see.
I mean, I'll give you a freebie. I was a little bit worried about... I'll say I was less worried about Brook and more worried about Bud when it came to Brook and the drop. Like, in a vacuum, I was worried about how deep Brook was dropping. And then from there, I'm just like, okay, is Bud actually going to have him play higher? Because the last couple of postseasons, it's just been, hey, this is what we do if you beat us, tip your cap. But to Bud's credit, he made the adjustment. And to Brook's credit, he looked pretty darn good playing up to the level of the screen. And then once Milwaukee leaned even more into the switching, he held his own with the switching as well. Some of just the auto switches there, some of the late switches. I remember possession in game two, I want to say, second half of game two, where Trae Young runs a high pick and roll with Clint Capella. Trae's able to turn the corner a little bit. He draws Brook Lopez out into the left corner, turns into an ISO. Brook keeps him in front, ends up being a shot clock violation because Trae couldn't do anything with him. And I'm just like, well, if Brook Lopez can do that on switches against Trae Young, and this is pre-injury, then honestly, it made me more upset with Bud. I was like, if Brook can do that, then why has he ever been playing this deep of a drop? He could just play at the level of this is the kind of if this is how he can kind of hold his own switches. But anyway, he's been incredible on the defensive end of the floor. he's done whatever Milwaukee has asked him to do offensively. He's operated as the spacer. He's bludgeoning dudes on the block when they've thrown it to him, which seems to happen like once every other quarter, which is a whole nother thing. But Brook has filled whatever gaps Milwaukee's needing him to, and he's a big part of why Milwaukee is in the finals.
Nah, he's been incredible. He has done what he's supposed to do. He's come a long way from, you know, I still remember they played Houston and they're switching Brook on to Kevin Porter Jr. and Kevin Porter Jr. is losing his mind. And now you come to the conference finals and you're holding your own with those switches. You maintain your size, even with Lopez, with Portis, and not having to go small to get to your switches. That's all positive stuff. So we'll see what goes on next, and we'll see what you think about this finals matchup, the Suns and the Bucks. It's time.
It is time. This is how I win. I'm so excited. Before we even get into the actual X's and O's of it, I am here for this finals. Chris Paul's getting a ring or Chris Middleton's getting a ring. Like, I have nothing to say about, I have nothing bad to say about this series. Very excited.
Is this just going to be one big victory lap? The whole finals?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yes. 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 I have nothing. that is the answer. But absolutely.
Only one of them can win.
I win. That's that's how I feel.
But you got to deal with one of the narratives.
I can't hear the narrative over the title ceremony.
Oh, man. This is where we're at. This is where we're starting.
Look, man.
First spot coverage of the finals.
Look, here we, like, let's be honest. Like, Chris Paul can average 8-5 in the finals. If the Suns win in 6 or something, he's winning finals MVP. And I'm just not going to say anything about it. Like, it's fine. Well-deserved.
All right, Nekias Dunkris. Let's get your thoughts on these finals.
I will start with the question for you. If you're Milwaukee, what's your base coverage on defense against Phoenix? Because that's where I'm torn as we enter this series. Like, the obvious question is, how healthy is Giannis going to be? Like, that's going to swing the series one way or another, I feel. But beyond that, because that's too obvious and neither of us are doctors as far as I know, what are you doing defensively if you're Milwaukee?
It's actually the number one question I had written down. It's going to be interesting to see, because Milwaukee is a team that has the ability to play multiple coverages, to make adjustments defensively, but they usually don't make them until they get punched in the face. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they start in a drop and see how they can manage it, see if it works, see if they can play out of it. I also wouldn't be surprised if they start switching. Now, the only surprise would be usually they work backwards. So they'll start at their base and then move on from there. Mm-hmm. But coming off a series where you had success switching, coming off a series where Phoenix got bogged down by switching from the Clippers, it would be interesting to see them come out to start. Maybe it's 1-4 to start. Maybe it's 1-5. You never know. I mean, is switching Brook onto Chris Paul the worst idea in the world, hoping you can contain and contest the mid-range jumper? I'm not sure it's the end of the world if that happens. The question is, what do you do with Devin Booker? Mm. You know, I imagine PJ Tucker will be on him. You got Drew on Chris Paul. Do you allow those guys the opportunity to navigate those screens to start, keep your base, protecting its roles, and play out of it from there? Maybe you just only give them those pull-ups. So there's a couple different ways Milwaukee can go. I, in my gut, expect them to start with drop, even if it's a little bit higher at the level, and adjust from there. But with the success they've had, I wouldn't be shocked if they started switching either.
See, I, like, initially I was kind of with you when I started thinking about it and writing about it. I'm going to have scouting reports for both sides. But I came into it thinking, I think Milwaukee's going to start in a drop. But this is where the potential Giannis absence creeps in for me. Because I think if Giannis is out, at least for game one, then they're probably going to stick with Bobby Portis at the four. And I do think we've seen throughout this postseason run, in the regular season too, but specifically during postseason run, Bobby Portis in a drop just doesn't work. And I think things tightened up in the back half of the Atlanta series when they just said, all right, we're just going to switch this. Like, if Bobby's in, we're going to switch, period. We'll peel if we have to. We'll send extra help if we have to elsewhere. But at a base, we don't want Bobby trying to navigate a drop. So I do think if Bobby has to start game one because Giannis is out, I probably lean more towards them sticking with the switching, if for no other reason than to just to kind of protect him and minimize his responsibilities there. And because we've talked about Phoenix throughout the season on this podcast, but also throughout the playoff run, their pick and roll attack is absurd. It is absurdly good. It's absurdly good. It's effective. It's diverse. They'll switch around who's running the action, where they're running it. The spacing changes. And even if the spacing changes, then those guys will relocate from there. Once the action starts, they will keep you moving. And Milwaukee cannot afford to be in rotation constantly against Phoenix. So I think if Giannis is out, I probably lean towards them being more switch heavy heading into game one.
Switch 1 through 4 or 1 through 5?
Probably 1 through 5. Because the wild card there becomes Ayton if they're going to switch 1 through 5. Because it's going to be up to Ayton to kind of pound those mismatches, either on the offensive glass or through post-ups, if that's what it boils down to. But I just wouldn't be surprised they come out, basically simplify everything. Like, okay, let's keep it in front. We're not even going to give you those pull-up windows. Let's make this an isolation thing, force you into some tough misses. And then if we force those misses, we're able to get out in transition. That's where we're at our best anyway.
No, I could see it going either way. I do agree with your point. This is not a series where Milwaukee can be in rotation. We saw what Atlanta was able to do once they got them in that scramble mode. We saw Milwaukee respond, but Phoenix is a different animal. Once they get you in rotation, they just keep moving the pieces around, as you talked about, to keep you in rotation. And when they have that combination of the roll being open, the skip pass being open, ball movement, drive and kick, pull-ups, that's when it's really tough. And now you don't know where it's coming. Now you're chasing. So Milwaukee's main mindset, whether it's through the drop or through switching, is to stay at home, stay out of rotation, keep the ball in front, and make Phoenix make those plays in front of you. You know, because even if they get to the switches, they can't give up drone penetration. I don't know if they'll be able to bog Phoenix down like Atlanta was, mm-hmm. only because Phoenix just saw it, or at least saw a measure of it. So those reps are going to be important. But Milwaukee has to have their defense in this series. They're going to have to be able to get stops and push on the other end, especially if Giannis is out. But of course, he's kind of the cloud hanging over everything, which shout out to him, by the way, for only escaping with that hyperextension.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's going to be huge. I have a question for you.
All right. Let me hear it.
What are the matchups you think for Bridges and Jay Crowder?
I actually had a who defends Giannis question ready for you. I would say they probably play it straight up, honestly. I think Jay Crowder defends whoever the four is. If that's Giannis, I mean, that's Giannis if he's healthy, and if not, it's going to be Bobby Portis. I think you just use the strength of Jay Crowder there. And Mikal Bridges, you just toss him on Chris Middleton and call it a day.
So you're okay with the Chris Paul Drew Holiday matchup?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Interesting. Are you concerned about the Milwaukee Bucks offense?
I am a little bit concerned, because I think this is definitely when you need Giannis to be kind of that battering ram. Like, Milwaukee didn't have much issue scoring against Phoenix during the regular season series. Again, these are two games, and the rosters were slightly different in both. So there's only so much you could take from that. But ultimately, Giannis is the guy that can bend things. Even if you throw a guy like DeAndre Ayton on him, like, Giannis still has the ability to extend, score past him, can bully him on certain occasions. Without Giannis, you're going to need more movement. And I don't know if... You know, part of Atlanta throwing more attention to Chris Middleton, aside from him being hot during like the game 6, the other part is that Atlanta their best wing defender was Cam Reddish. And beyond him, I'll just say there's a drop off defensively. Phoenix doesn't have that issue. They just have more wing defenders. They have a better defensive ecosystem in general than Atlanta does. So I don't think they'll have to completely shift things the way that Atlanta did. And I think that can make it a little bit tougher for Milwaukee to create open looks. Again, you know, Drew Holiday is a tough shot maker. Chris Middleton in particular is a tough shot maker. So they can survive that way. But I do expect the offense to look clunkier than it did against Atlanta if Giannis isn't there.
And that's a concern. If the offense looks clunkier and somehow less seasoned than it has over this playoff run, they're in trouble. I agree with you. I had that down in my notes, just that Phoenix has better defensive personnel to handle those matchups, and they have a better mindset help defense-wise. They're stronger in that area, so some of those openings may not be there in the same way. The big question for me is, how are they going to be able to generate quality looks? As Milwaukee was able to get the job done to end the series against Atlanta, it wasn't necessarily because of movement. Now, they did do some good things spacing-wise as far as moving guys around. Brook Lopez had some success cutting from the perimeter. They mixed up who was in the dunker spot, so Atlanta could never really get a good feel. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't necessarily straight movement actions. They were still kind of sticky a little bit in the half court. I mean, I think it was game five, first three buckets were off Drew and Chris Middleton ISOs on the side. So it's going to be up to them to generate more movement, give themselves a chance against a team that's better equipped to defend them. And, you know, can they get the Suns in rotation? Can they force the Suns to have to help? The Clippers were able to make shots and then find a way to generate shots either by using guard screens or post-ups to force a double or attacking the drop or attacking a switch. Milwaukee's going to have to get to that to generate those looks because the three-point shot has not been falling for them. And you can't combine poor shooting with an inability to generate quality looks. That's going to make it real tough sledding for Milwaukee. And we know the issues they've had as far as sometimes getting to what they want, putting that pressure on a defense. And Phoenix is a team you have to put pressure on. If you're going to let them guard you, they will guard you. They will defend you. They will bog you down and run and score on the other end, as we saw in the Denver series. Mm-hmm. So Milwaukee's going to have to really bring it offensively, especially in the half court.
And to that point, I'll ask you a guard question. Who do you think is going to have a bigger impact in this series? Campaign or Brent Forbes?
Campaign. I think Campaign should. Now, Brent Forbes, I think a lot of his impact may come off if Giannis playing, but I'm concerned about Brent Forbes being attacked by Chris Paul, Devin Booker, those kind of things. So I think Campaign's ability to get downhill, his ability to penetrate, push the pace, attack early, maybe attack before Milwaukee gets set, those kind of plays should have more of an impact. They're going to need Forbes shooting, and they're going to need Forbes to be able to stay on the floor just to have some versatility. But I would lean more towards Payne in this series, just with what is currently being presented.
Okay, makes sense. I was just listening to you make the point about Milwaukee, you know, maybe having to create some traction with some guard pick and rolls and things like that. I do think using Brent Forbes as a guy that can, you know, create some confusion with some ghost screens or just some inverted pick and rolls with him and Chris Middleton. Like, I think that's a way for them to kind of generate some decent looks and make Phoenix bend a little bit. But to your point, I mean, on the other end is where it gets a little bit scary, because Phoenix will find the cracks in your scheme. If you have a crack in your scheme and you have a negative defender, then they're just going to have a field day. So I'm interested to see, like, how much Milwaukee can afford to play Forbes. The shooting's going to have to be there.
Well, actually, I was going to ask you this question off that. This is a series for both benches, right? I mean, we've seen Milwaukee's guys not necessarily be able to have the impact that was more in the Brooklyn series than anything else. We've seen Phoenix's guys maybe have some issues over the last couple series, especially, you know, the Sarches of the world. Is this a series for both of those sides to potentially improve?
I can see it. Particularly from Milwaukee's side, I think they're going to have to grease the wheels some kind of way. They're going to need something from everyone, which cliche thing to say on the surface. But again, if we don't know what Giannis's status is, and I do think they're going to have to be creative with the way that they generate looks. So they're going to need that randomness from Bryn Forbes. They're going to need some randomness from Pat Connaughton off the bench as a guy that cuts well, as a guy that screens well, relocates above the breaks, is willing to take deep threes, a guy that can fill either wing spot in transition and kind of get open that way. Like, they're going to need those kind of boosts to hold serve, because in the half court, Phoenix is so disciplined and they have so many good defenders, period. Wing defenders, interior defenders, like what DeAndre Ayton has been able to do defensively this season, period, has been great. Being able to operate in different schemes, doing a better job of navigating screening actions. You can see him getting more comfort on that. And that's something that we've talked about on multiple occasions on this podcast already, just how he navigates complex actions. They're going to need production from everyone. They're going to need randomness from everyone. So I do think this could be a big bench series. And for Phoenix side, you know, Chris Paul and Devin Booker aren't going to play all 48 minutes. And we touched on it a little bit at the top of the segment, but I mean, Milwaukee has bodies to throw at those two guys as well. Like, Drew Holiday can defend either Chris Paul or Devin Booker, depending on what the lineups are. You know, Chris Middleton is a guy that's lengthy. PJ Tucker is probably going to spend some time on Devin Booker. I'm not 100% sold that he starts on Booker. We'll just have to see. Chris Middleton did get a lot of that matchup during the regular season series, but I mean, it wouldn't shock me if that is the case. But, you know, to that point, I mean, you're going to need campaign to kind of come in off the bench and give you some random offense. Torrey Craig, another wing defender that they can throw on Chris Middleton. How well is he going to shoot from three? I mean, they're going to leave him open. Can he knock down enough corner shots to carve out a role in the series? What does Dario Saric look like? Do we see Frank Kaminsky? So I do think this is a series with the way that both of these teams play and some of the questions marks either of these guys can have in the half court. Wouldn't surprise me at all if some bench guys swing a quarter or swing a half.
And just random, shout out to Pat Connaughton. He's made some timely big threes for the Bucks during this playoff run. So I want to shout him out. Quick question for you, just based on what you were saying, I was thinking it out loud. How soon will the Jeff Teague slander hit during the finals?
If Jeff Teague sees the floor with the score within 25 points, I have a tweet in the drafts already. Can't happen. Can't happen.
Let me check his age real quick.
You are more than willing to check his age. It can't happen. It can't happen. Society has progressed past the need for important Jeff Teague minutes. I think we've seen enough. Have you gotten the age check yet?
33. This does track.
Okay. I'll let you have it. That's not well, three.
He's going to play. He's gonna have to play, especially if Giannis is out. Mathematically, he's going to have to play. And
can't get
are you prepared for the Jeff Teague 4-for-5 from three swings a game for the Bucks?
Jeez, it's gonna be the lowest moment of the podcast.
I'm just asking you if you're prepared for that moment. I don't know if it's gonna happen. But are you gonna run to the parking lot with a "we saw you"? Do I have to do that? Is that the rule?
I am giving you full. If Jeff T gives a 4-for-5 from three game, you have full license to go "we saw you." That is fine. I would just eat the L on that. Give us some Jordan Wara minutes. Let's get Sam Merrill out there.
Sam Merrill.
Let's let Tadassus run point. You know, we don't have to do Jeff T. It's fine.
Side note, I love Thanasis. I love watching him play. Man is just a big ball of energy. Man called for a lob with a help side defender right in front of him in the Hawks series. There's no lob to be thrown. The help is there. And this man is pointing to the heavens above as if this is going to happen. I mean, he did roll. Secretly, he may be a better pick and roll screener than Giannis. I think he is, but I just want to see him be a big ball of energy. Do you think Milwaukee has enough to make it tough on Chris Paul and Devin Booker like the Clippers did?
I think so. Again, like, I don't see... It's tough for me to see where Chris Paul gets the easy looks. And I think what we saw in the Clipper series from Patrick Beverley in particular is just they just got physical and relentless with Devin Booker. They picked him up full court just to make him work harder to get across half court. Were physical with him off the ball, fronting him, try to take away some of those early screening looks where he's lifting from the baseline, taking the pin down and catching at the elbow and attacking from there, face guarding him just to make him jump side to side and, you know, basically like a wide receiver press, basically making him go into his bag just to get open. I think the Bucks have guys that can make him do that. I mean, again, from a size perspective, like Chris Middleton got a lot of matchup during the regular season. Like, he is lengthy enough and he has good enough navigating screens to where he can make life tough for Devin Booker. PJ Tucker, if and when he gets that assignment, I don't know if it'll be from Tip or not, but he'll definitely get a crack at Devin Booker. You saw what he did with Kevin Durant. Didn't always look great, but the physicality was there. You saw what he did in limited reps against Trae Young. Just kind of take away some of those automatics, as you said, with switching. But, I mean, did try his best to mirror him there. Going back to the first round, the work that he did against Jimmy Butler, dealing with that physicality and making life a little bit tougher on Butler. So they have the horses to make Devin Booker work. And I think that's the foundation of slowing down Devin Booker. Because with the high release point, particularly mid-range, like he's going to make or miss. Like, there's only so much you can do with that kind of release point. And you combine that with the footwork that he has and things like that. But you make him work hard before he gets to that point. That's where you can have some fun as a defense. So I think Milwaukee can do that. And again, Chris Paul, he's going to see a lot of Drew, I would imagine. And that's not a fun matchup for anybody. And this is where, as good as Chris Paul is, like, he's not a bursty dude. And I don't think he's going to be able to out-muscle Drew at all. So I'm interested to see just what the quality of his looks are going to be in this series.
Are you concerned about their ability to navigate screens, the screening actions for Devin Booker at all?
I would say I'm a little more worried. Just kind of bounce back on my point. I'll probably be a little bit more worried about PJ Tucker than anyone else. But also, I don't know, like, this seems like a better matchup for him because, like, when you got the matchup against Trey periodically, like, Trey's a short, quick, shifty dude. And then you go back to the Nets series, like, Kevin Durant isn't super explosive, but he can just completely shoot over the top. Like, Booker doesn't have that kind of quickness advantage. He is faster than PJ Tucker, but it isn't as blatant as the Trae Young thing is. And he doesn't have the size slash length advantage that Kevin Durant does. So I do think even if Tucker falls behind a little bit, he has more of an ability to kind of get those rear view contests, if that makes sense, and kind of bother his hip that way. And just from a physicality standpoint, like, he should be able to bother Booker off the ball.
No, I think the activities would be there. I think the denials would be there. Phoenix is pretty good at mixing up their handoff actions a little bit better than Atlanta did. So I'm interested to see how Milwaukee navigates those differences there. My only concern is with the movement they can throw with Devin Booker, with some of the screening angles they use with him, with, you know, screening for him under the basket, you know, at the block. Now he's in handoffs. Can he stay attached? Will Devin Booker get loose? Because they make it tough to make it an automatic switch. So I'm interested there. Who do you think is more important for Milwaukee to try and take away, Devin Booker or Chris Paul?
I think it's more important for them to take away Booker. Like, I think he's the tip of the spear in that way. And if... Because the other part about the shot not falling is that he has shown throughout this postseason that he has the tendency to kind of force things when he does get frustrated. And that's not unique to him. Like, that happens to a lot of basketball players. That's a natural thing to have, especially if you have that score role. But I do think if they're able to frustrate him and tire him out with, like, full court pressure and just kind of bump him off the ball and get him frustrated, take away some of those clean looks, he does have a propensity to kind of force things from there. So that could further disrupt what Phoenix wants to do offensively, kind of get them away from that flow. And again, if they're able, if Milwaukee's able to force Phoenix into some misses, they are at their best when they're able to run. That's with or without Giannis. And just kind of playing out of that. So I think bothering and frustrating Devin Booker is going to be priority number one for Milwaukee.
I think I'd agree there. I think you obviously don't want to allow Chris Paul to have those obvious looks that he can get. So you want to make sure you try and keep the ball in front with the switches. But you have to make it tough on Devin Booker. You have to take at least one of the two away, or at least make them quote-unquote inefficient to give yourself an opportunity. Who do you think is more important in this series, DeAndre Ayton or Brook Lopez?
Ah, man.
On a heater, folks.
That's a really good question. I am going to say, I think it's going to be Ayton. I think it's Ayton because I'm really curious to see what his offensive touches are going to look like in this series. If it's in drop, will he have the little push shot going? Will he have the mid-range jumper going? If it does become a switch fest for Milwaukee, will he be able to bully those smaller guys? Will he be able to make an impact on the offensive glass? Because I think that's where things can swing, at least among the starting lineup. Obviously, Milwaukee's going to toss out their best resources to slow down Chris Paul and Devin Booker. I think Ayton is the guy that can kind of shake loose a little bit. I mean, naturally, he's going to be the guy that can help those other two guys shake loose with his screening and kind of flipping angles and getting downhill and forcing, you know, forcing that tag, and then that's going to open up kickouts and things of that nature. But if he can self-create at all, or if he can really add some scoring punch, either doing the dirty work with offensive rebounds or just punishing mismatches, then I think that could further swing things for Milwaukee, especially if like Giannis is out for game one or however long he may or may not be out. Like, I think he has the ability to swing things in that way.
The reason I asked the question is I feel like both of these guys are so important to either one of these teams winning a championship. With DeAndre Ayton, it's a very interesting series. I think every series we've had with the Suns, I've asked, is this the series? Can he handle it? Those kind of things. He's passed the test every single time. Mm-hmm. This is going to be an interesting one in the sense that defensively, is he going to be in a drop? Is that going to allow Chris Middleton to get pull-ups? Will that force a switch situation? Will he be able to keep the ball in front? How will he handle when Brook Lopez is spaced? How will he handle when Brook Lopez is cutting? Offensively, can Milwaukee take his impact away, whether it's through a drop or switch, take away his roles? And now he's mainly a rebounder and occasional post-up guy. Can he have the same impact that he's had this entire playoff run? And I think that's going to be so key for Phoenix, because they don't have necessarily, I mean, they have small lineups they can throw out there, but it's not like a massive piece. And if whenever Giannis comes back, if he does come back, he's going to have to handle that as well. So I'm very interested there. I think with Brook, it comes down to usage, I feel like, more than straight talent.
Yeah.
How are they going to use him? If he's just going to be spaced, he's probably not going to have the same impact. You know, he's going to have to be a guy who's spaced, cutting, posting up, hitting threes defensively. He's going to have to be active. Whether they ask him to switch from the jump or not, he's going to have to be available in the drop to contest those pull-ups. So he has a pretty big role, but it's tough to project because you don't know how Milwaukee's going to roll the dice to start with Brook. But he has the potential to swing the series, and they're going to need him, especially early without Giannis, to generate some offense, to generate some post-ups, hit some threes, space the floor, just give a different look. And then defensively, he has to be there, whether it's in a drop or switch. So I'm intrigued either way. I think they're both going to be big, big pieces of this.
Mm-hmm. I'll flip one of your earlier questions on you. Let's say Giannis is back. Could be game one, could be game two, whatever. How are you doling out the defensive matchups for Phoenix? Like, what are you doing with Jay Crowder, Mikal Bridges? Because you seem surprised that I didn't like cross match to get more length on Chris Paul. Well, on Drew Holiday.
I was a little surprised. just especially with Giannis, I was a little surprised. If Giannis is in, I think you put Crowder on Giannis and you trust your team defense. And then for me, you have to put Bridges on Middleton. And CP3 is going to have to guard Drew. Now, the question is, how do you – I mean, do you want to hide CP3 on PJ Tucker? Those kind of things. But I think if Giannis is back, it's got to be Crowder. You can use your switches to get Ayton on him. You can use your team defense to build a wall and show help and then recover. But I think that's probably the route I would go.
I'll go ahead.
I was just thinking, I don't love the CP3 Drew matchup, not because Chris Paul can't guard him, just because of the aggression we've seen from Drew Holiday here of late. And you may get in a scenario where now he's posting up, maybe he's drawn some fouls, maybe he's in, I don't know. I just don't know what that looks like. And so I have a question mark around that one. It's not a liability, but it feels like a thing. If that makes sense.
I don't see that. Like, I would think heading into the series is something that they go with off tip, and it's something that they adjust if it becomes untenable. And I think if Drew makes the Chris Paul matchup untenable, as good as Chris Paul is, then I think Phoenix might have bigger issues on their hands. So, but to your point, like, I am intrigued to see what Paul, if they do decide to stash Paul on PJ Tucker, what it looks like. Because I don't think it's going to be the Trae Young thing, because I think Chris Paul has always been a good guard rebounder. And he can also do Chris Paul things when it comes to those loose ball situations and can draw fouls that way, or can just flat out frustrate PJ Tucker. Maybe get him into it, maybe draw a technical on him if he gets frustrated with the way he boxed out or something like that. Like, that would be a fun game within the game. It wouldn't surprise me to see them go to that matchup if they do want to take him off Drew.
Quick narrative talk. We're getting a new champion either way. How cool is that in this finals for this season?
It is very cool for me personally. But no, in all seriousness, I do think this is great. Like, I'm glad that we have some new blood on this kind of stage. Like, both of these teams are really freaking good. Like, even though Milwaukee's had their shortcomings in the postseason the past couple of seasons, it feels like they haven't fully been appreciated for what they've been throughout the last couple of seasons. Like, so much of Buck's talk has surrounded around what is Giannis going to do since he hadn't signed the extension yet. And then he signs the extension to stay in Milwaukee, and it's just like the talk around Milwaukee just kind of stopped, which was weird this season in particular with the way that they figuratively and literally switched things around on both ends this year. And for Phoenix, man, to come off the season that they had last year, a solid campaign, even though it was a little bit derailed by the DeAndre Ayton suspension, they go to the bubble, go 8-0. They trade for Chris Paul. They add some veterans, and they are pretty much a metronome all year long, hanging around the top 5 to 8 in half-court offense and defense all season long. They're playing slow. They're figuring out Chris Paul, Devin Booker, backcourt. The net rating with those two guys on the floor wasn't great, and then it was great, and then they just continued to gel, continued to gain experience. You get growth from Booker. You get growth from Ayton. You get campaign resurgence. Like, this, it's been fun to watch both of these teams, and I'm glad they have this stage. I really hope Giannis is back healthy. A, because he deserves this moment for as great as he's been and the way that he's kind of pushed through his own shortcomings, particularly in the postseason. Like, I'd like to see him healthy, but also I want to see these teams at full strength, man. Like, there's only so much you can take from the regular season meetings in general, but like, go back and watch those regular season games between those two. Like, they were wildly fun games because these teams are very freaking good. So I want to see him at full strength. I want to see some great basketball between the two, and I think we're going to get it.
How do you like Mikal Bridges' chances against Chris Middleton? Sorry. Milkshake time, bud.
No, like, I think this is a good matchup for Mikal Bridges, like one of the best wing defenders in the NBA. Still a shame that he didn't make an all-defensive team this season.
Oh, my goodness. We're bringing this back.
We're spinning the block. This is my time to shine, all right? We got Chris Paul and Chris Milton in the finals. If I want to rehash something that I think I should get licensed on this particular episode.
The hashtag is Big Mad, folks.
It is absolutely Big Mad. But no, I think this is going to be good. I mean, Mikal Bridges is one of the best wing defenders in the league. Very good at navigating screens. And, you know, Chris Middleton is not a bursty dude. He's not a guy that's going to gain a bunch of separation. Now, the counter to that is that he doesn't need much because of the high release point. He's a tough shot maker. But if we're just looking at the matchup, like, I think Mikal Bridges is going to be at Chris Middleton's hip all the time. It's going to come down to Chris Middleton knocking down tough shots, because I do think Mikal Bridges is going to be lost very often.
How important is Jrue Holiday's offense going to be in this series? We saw him prove the worth of the trade in that Brooklyn series at the end, making the big shots, made some huge plays against Atlanta. Can he do enough offensively to shift this from Milwaukee?
Oh boy, he can. He can. He's talented enough. I'm a little bit worried about what his shot selection is going to look like. I do think if he gets the Chris Paul matchup, like, he should be able to get downhill. And if they do clear out a side for him, or like a sideline out of bounds play or whatever, like, he should be able to gain some traction against Chris Paul on the block. I'm worried about everything else, because he will go into his and-one mixtape bag at a moment's notice, and he will take some wild pull-ups and some wild turnarounds. And this Phoenix team is not one that you can waste possessions against. So I'm worried about, you know, if Giannis misses game one or however long he's out, if Jrue has to assume more on-ball responsibility, that means he has to make more decisions. And Jrue is a better decision maker. He's a much better decision maker than Eric Bledsoe, but that is an entirely different thing than saying Jrue Holiday is a great decision maker.
Eric Bledsoe slander?
He didn't want to be here. But
wow. Wow. Let me check his age real quick. He's in Cancun chilling by himself, and you just took him out with a steel chair.
I don't know about that. The man's rich, making millions of dollars. He can take a shot on the podcast. It's fine. He's not as good as Jrue Holiday. That's not slander. It's just the truth.
But this tracks.
Does it track? How old is Eric Bledsoe?
Give me 1 second. Internet's so slow.
I could have sworn Bledsoe was like 28, 29. Like, I don't even think this is an age thing. It's just him not being as good as Jrue.
31, this tracks.
Oh, okay. I still don't like the bid, but fair enough. I'll let you have it. Yeah, this has to be a good decision-making series for Jrue. You kind of live with if he makes the shots and misses the shots, but, like, they have to be good shots.
It's so weird. I feel like Jrue Holiday had, like, really good games the last two against Atlanta, but it never felt easy. Like, I feel like, I don't want to say he gets in his own way, but, like,
he gets in his own way, you could say it.
It makes it tougher than it should be. Like, sometimes I'll have a mismatch and I'm like, how did you end up with the fadeaway from the elbow? You were on the block. Like, those kind of deals. So it'll be interesting to see, because I think he can shift it. And I think we saw the Clippers low-key attack Chris Paul at times, put him in pick and roll. So I think that's going to be a part of Milwaukee's attack. I wonder how much they go at Devin Booker. I wonder how much they try and get Crowder and Bridges out of action. And force Ayton to be a weak side defender, maybe with Brooks based on the wing or in the corner. So that's going to be interesting to see how they navigate that. I do have another question for you.
All right, go for it.
Bigger winner in this series, Torrey Craig or Nekias Duncan?
This might be my favorite question. I think the answer is yes. In Torrey Craig's case, since he was a member of the Milwaukee Bucks and is currently a member of the Phoenix Suns, Torrey Craig gets a championship ring regardless of who wins this series. And similarly, whoever wins this series gets, I get vindication. Like, Chris Paul adds a ring to his resume, or Chris Middleton is an NBA champion. So Torrey Craig and I are sitting pretty in the series, I feel like.
Folks, I don't know what to do with this. I don't know what defense to put into the finals coverage here. I don't know whether to go man-to-man zone. I'm stuck right now. I'm trying to find a way.
This is good for me specifically. Like I'm just here to focus on great basketball, because in terms of like narrative stuff or feel good stuff, like that's on lock. A Chris is winning a title this year. I'm good. So now I just want to see what's going to happen in the series, because these are two very good basketball teams. This is beautiful.
How important is the coaching going to be? Monty Williams has shown an ability to navigate whatever you throw at him and get this team back to where they need to be. You know, they had to deal with the Lakers. They had to deal with Denver and Jokic. They had to deal with the Clippers, small ball, Paul George. And they found a way to get back to themselves at every turn. Milwaukee has also overcome adversity, but they have also stepped into adversity before overcoming it. And so my thing is, Milwaukee has to be better to start, because Phoenix isn't the team you want to hand an advantage to.
Yeah.
Even you saw what the Clippers had to do just to keep competing. And I don't know if Milwaukee has that in their back pocket as far as those kind of adjustments. They have some tools in the bag, mm-hmm. but they don't necessarily have, another ace they can throw on the floor. And Phoenix is a team that once they figure out they can cut you up, they're going to keep slicing until they get the win. So I'm very intrigued to see what the Bucks come out with as their base plan, and where they go from there, and what Phoenix looks to attack them with on both ends of the floor. Like, that's going to be fascinating to me.
Yeah, like, this is not a series that Milwaukee can afford to play from behind against, because, I mean, Phoenix is just going to blitz them at that point, just to echo what you've said. So I think Monty's a better coach, for what it's worth. And for Phoenix side, like, you just went through who they went against. Like, Frank Vogel in round one, Mike Malone in round two. They just got through Ty Lue. And now we're getting to Bud, which, actually, I'll pose the question. How would you grade Bud's performance in this postseason?
We're going points, or we're going, like, letters?
You go letter grade.
B minus for me. He's done very good things as far as being able to find a way to keep Brook Lopez on the floor, sticking with his big lineup, not panicking, but still making adjustments, finding mismatches, retooling things offensively, defensively, getting buy-in, adding the switching in at the right times, whether switching 1 through 4, 1 through 5, just kind of making those adjustments. The only issue I've had, why it's a B minus, is there's still more on the table. Like, it kind of feels like a test where you got some of the answers right, but you didn't show your work.
Mm-hmm. It's a great way to put it.
And like, I when I watch them, it's hard to not think they could be better. And this is a scenario where they're going to have to be better. And that's going to be the ultimate test for them. So I've been hard on the Bucks this postseason, just because, you know, the offense has been unseasoned and the defense has been up and down. But they've done enough good things to get here. They deserve the credit for that. They're just going to have to do it right from the jump in this series. And they can't afford necessarily getting their own way, because that other team on the other side is going to be ready to go.
Yeah, I definitely feel you on that. Man, I would... B minus is good, because I would have went B. Because my thing with Bud is, like, in a vacuum, he's made every adjustment that you wanted to see in this postseason. It's just that they basically stepped in their own poo before doing it. So, like, you kind of have to be docked for that. But the Bucks are also in the finals. And regardless of when the adjustments were made or the circumstances that caused the adjustments, like, they were made. They worked, and they're in the finals. So it's hard to say he's done a bad job. And that's probably as nice as I'll be about it for now. We'll see how the rest of the series plays out.
Did you just come on this podcast and call him Mike Pudenholzer?
Yes.
that,
That was good. That was pretty good. I will give you that one. I have one final question for you.
What you got?
Who do you have winning this series?
Suns and six. I got the Suns and six. I think Milwaukee can generate enough defense to potentially get Phoenix in the mud.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to compete. I just think Phoenix has been too good. They've adjusted too well. They've executed too well. They have the ability to play defense, execute in the half court, win multiple types of games. You want to run and gun, they can do that. You want to make it a slugfest, they can do that. So I'm going to lean on Phoenix's ability to figure it out. I'm going to lean on Chris Paul and Devin Booker. And with Giannis's status unclear, I'm going to go Suns and six.
Okay. That is definitely fair. Man. I want to go Bucks and six.
Then do it. Do it. Do it. Come on, Nikias. This is a win for you no matter what.
I mean, that's true. But I mean, I also don't just want to throw stuff to the wind. Like, I want to go Bucks and six because I do think when healthy, the Bucks have pretty easily the best player in the series. Incomparable talent elsewhere, or at the very least is made more comparable because of the type of impact that Giannis can have and the kind of defensive attention he can draw. But I just don't, I have a feeling we're going to see Giannis in the series. I'm just not 100% convinced that it's going to be game one. So I probably lean Suns in six now, mostly because of the Giannis thing. I can't. If I knew Giannis was healthy, I'd feel more comfortable picking Milwaukee. But with that being up in the air, I'm going to go Phoenix because, I mean, they do have the coaching edge. They do have more ways to fluster what Milwaukee wants to do, even with Giannis in, because of the defensive personnel and the coaching that goes along with that. So I will echo your sentiments. I'll say Phoenix in six. Chris Paul gets a ring.
Are you already tired of the Phoenix didn't play anyone, everyone was hurt narrative?
I'm just completely ignoring it. It's ridiculous. Injuries happen every year. Chris Paul was hurt. Like, we don't have to. We're not going to end the pod with a big man segment. No, I'm not. I'm not even. No.
Oh, for two from the line for me, folks. tried to get it going, and couldn't get it done. I apologize. Let me check what let me see who your ally is with your son. Actually, no, I picked the Suns too. Can't even end with that.
You know what? All of the let me check his age real quick, and I've been standing for Chris Paul this entire podcast. How do you explain that?
He's Chris Paul.
Okay.
It doesn't apply.
Okay.
You said you love him more than a family member. That that rises above the bit.
But you see, I had I have younger family members too, so it's not even the age thing there. Like, you know, Chris Paul is incredible.
No. Okay. So hey, gotta be a better person. I'll take the L on that one.
That's fun. I am surprised that you have not tried to end this with a Chris Middleton question, just for old time's sake.
I used so much of the Chris Middleton content in the first 23 episodes of this podcast. Like, it wasn't easy generating a Chris Middleton question every week.
This is why you should have saved them. Like, I had Milwaukee going to the finals before the season. Like, you should have planned for this. You should have had like two in the chamber just in case they actually did it.
All right. I got one for you.
All right.
Better pull-up jumper in the mid-range, Chris Middleton or Chris Paul?
Wow. okay. I'll give you the rebound. That's cool. It's Chris Paul. It's fine. It's Chris Paul. One of the greatest to ever do it. Sorry, other Chris.
Yeah, I mean, that works. Is Thanasis the next Rui Hachimura?
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast. You can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later.
Bye, guys.